NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
And that's 1-800-BYDESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by Jim Thomas and Tom Timmerman. And guys, let's start right into it. A resounding victory over the Tucson Roadrunners keeps our heroes on track for playoff hockey. Guys, I'm not saying that was a Troy Terry-Jay Beagle mismatch, but it wasn't good, JT. It was kind of one-sided.
For a change, you know, this wasn't one of the predictable pratfalls. And I thought all the ingredients were there for that to be the case. You're coming off a tough road trip, long travel, and really a lot of energy expended both in Edmonton and Calgary by the Blues. But you know, I told some people before the game, I'm not going to really buy in that the Blues are serious about this playoff push until they beat one of these also-rans. Well, they beat, as you mentioned, the Roadrunners. They beat them like a drum. And so a very good sign, for the boys.
And to me, I mean, that win is more impressive than the win in Calgary was. I mean, they, you know, because we have seen so many times seen them screw up that game. And so they didn't do that. And so that's a telling win going forward as to what they're going to do, because they are going to play some bad teams along the way. And it shows that they can do the things they need to do to get those wins.
Okay. So let's backtrack just for a bit here to hit a negative note, because it wouldn't be a net for our presence if we didn't go negative. You know, JT, the last time we talked to you on the net front, you were in Edmonton, and what the hell happened there with Jordan Binnington at the start of that game? That might have been the worst thing I've seen since the brief career of Jim, the net detective Carey, in goal for our heroes. That was not good.
No, it wasn't. And Berube, in typical Berube, maybe even more than typical Berube style. So he throws Binnington under the bus. Then I give him a chance to, okay, you know, maybe be a little less harsh with a question about, you know, does he need his confidence? And no, he just backed the bus over him again. So, and I kind of got vibes organizationally until this recent turnabout of good play that the team was not too crazy about their goaltending lately. That, okay, the defense makes mistakes. This happens. Make some saves. Good goalies are erasers. How many times have we heard Mr. Timmerman say about Binnington when he was doing great things that he makes big saves at opportune times? And that's not happening, far from it. And I think Berube has just gotten very frustrated with Jordan Binnington. Hey, go out and make a save. Yeah, we know our defense makes problems. We know has problems occasionally. We know they make mistakes, but make a save. And, you know, It's definitely Husso's net. This thing has evolved throughout the season. There was a period where they were splitting time, but I just can't see that happening these final 13 games. I mean, almost symbolically, just within the last game or two, Husso now has more minutes. He has more games played. And he's tied him in starts, tied Binnington in starts. So we've got three back-to-backs here, the last three weekends of the regular season. And I'd be hard pressed to say where else Jordan Binnington squeezes in a start there.
Yeah. If you don't start Binnington against Arizona, I guess you could start him against Seattle, but really, I mean, if you don't start him in that game against the worst team in the league, what spot are you going to pick to play him? You know, and it's not as though the Blues are playing worse in front of Binnington than they are in front of Husso. It's the same defense. They make the same defense, the same mistakes. They create the same chances for the other team. And if you put them side by side, Husso's making the saves, and Bennington's not. And so that's you know, what's going to determine it going forward here.
Then Ville Husso, he steps up to the plate. He helps him get a point in Edmonton. And, you know, it's going to be tough when you get to get out of regulation against Edmonton, let's admit it. And then, you know, it was a wild game in Calgary, but he held up. So at a tough weekend, he comes through with 3 out of 4 points. Then he comes back with a more routine game against, you know, against the Roadrunners. And I thought it was interesting to, I don't know if he was trying to send a message or whatever, but the chief was sort of lavishing praise on Husso, not only for, you know, playing well, but, you know, his work ethic and his preparation. It appears the chief is pretty well sold on Ville, but maybe not as much on Jordan.
Yeah. That's definitely the vibe. And just to kind of add to Tom's last point, let's go to the first Calgary game, the 7-1 debacle. Again, circumstances very similar. It was the end of a Western road trip. It was the third game in 4 days, and it was the second game of the back-to-back. Calgary had 48 shots in that game. Well, very similar circumstances here this time around. Calgary had 43 shots in this game. Also, even though the Blues beat Calgary 6-4, the shots were 25-9 at one point in the game Saturday. And yet through two periods, it was a 3-2 Blues lead. Whereas in Calgary on the 24th through two periods, it was a 7-1 Calgary lead. So Husso's making saves. Bennington is not. And yeah, it definitely seems like Berube's going to roll with Husso. And I mean, obviously there are a ton of future ramifications, offseason ramifications, but you don't worry about July in April when you're in a playoff race and think you have a pretty good team.
Yeah, there was a while Husso hit a little dip, but he's come back. He's the guy. I mean, there's no, you know, debating it at this point. I don't think as Jim has said, I don't know that there's a case to be made for seeing Jordan Bennington getting in games. You know, maybe it's good for the Blues if they clinch and are locked into a playoff spot early and they can get, you know, rest Husso and give Bennington a couple of games there. But it's welcome to the net, Ville Husso, the rest of the way.
Big story coming out of this game was the more balanced scoring. Of course, you're playing the Roadrunners, but still, it's impressive to see the 20 goal club fill up. And you know, I look around the league, JT, and I see even a team like Boston, which is, you know, an upper tier team, they've got to run Eric Halla out as the number two center and try to prop him up with Pasternak and Hall, and then try to have Bergeron drive a line without with Marchand kind of splitting up the perfection line. We're seeing that a lot around the league. Meanwhile, the Blues legitimately have three lines that can attack, and it's interesting. It's just right now, as if they can get Jordan Kyrou going, coming back from illness. This may be the most impressive offense we've seen this franchise have balance-wise since the mid-80s.
Yeah. And when there was a lot more scoring in the league, it was just a higher scoring league, although it's kind of trending that way now with the scoring up this year. But an outside chance, but still, you know, Thomas nearly had a couple goals last night, and O'Reilly has perked up. They have an outside chance to have every member of their top nine finish with 20 or more goals. We always talk here at the net front about Armstrong. His kind of mantra is, I don't want a superstar system. I want a collection of good to really good players. And this may be his crowning achievement, at least up front. Now the Blue scoring is down a little bit on the blue line. They've been first or second most of recent years. And at last check, they were tied for 10th in goals by defensemen. But to have a league high seven players with 20 or more goals is really something. And we asked Berube about it last night, and he talked about, if you're defending the Blues, who do you shut down? I mean, okay, there's no Draisaitl. There's no McJesus, as Gordo calls him. There's no Austin Matthews. But if you're in a playoff series with the Blues, okay, we're gonna shut down the Thomas Tarasenko line, well, then maybe that's the night where Perron scores a couple of goals, or Shen, or Kyrou, or vice versa. If you concentrate on another line, it's like a Chief said, you don't necessarily have, not many teams have six top end defensemen that you can throw on three different lines. So it's the hope of this team is up front. And if the defense and goaltending can just kind of hold together a little bit, then there's your hope for a deep playoff run.
Yeah, it really shifts the focus to say what is this team defensively is going to have to, is what it's going to need to get it, because those top two pairings would now, Scandella and Parayko, and will it be Krug and Falk, or what happens when Krug comes back, is can those units shut down the other team's top two lines? And then can the Blues third line outscore the other team's third line? So it is going to make the focus on defensively, can the Blues do that? Because offensively, it looks like they should be able to get the job done, unless you were to get in a circumstance where somebody can shut down that top two and then Jordan Kyrou goes into a funk or something. But it is an optimistic sign going forward if the defense can do its job.
Of course, that's a big if, JT. We've talked about it all year in the net front. But some good news in the sense that the indications are that it would seem they expect Torrey Krug to be back, certainly for the playoffs, maybe a little before the playoffs, get that sense that, well, maybe not imminent by the end of the month.
Yeah. I think maybe by next week at this time, we'll have a better feel on Krug. Remember, he was week to week with that hand wrist injury. So, Letty's playing really good. Scandella's on a good stretch here. Bet Hockman is taking to calling him Springtime Scandella, saying Springtime Scandella is usually a good Scandella, I guess, hearkening back to when he replaced Jay Bouwmeester in the 1920 season. And also, fellas, I'm here to declare, can we have a moratorium, Blues fans, just at least for a while, until further notice, on bashing Colton Parayko? Colton is plus 26 since the All-Star break. Plus 26. Again, I know not the end-all be-all stat, but he's been on the ice for a lot of good things. He's leading the league in plus-minus at plus 26 since the All-Star break. The second best player there is Leon Draisaitl at plus 18. Parayko's, there've been a couple bumps here since the All-Star break, but he's playing very, very well.
He's the best defenseman the Blues have. Though defensively, the most unexpected thing is Calle Rosén has become a regular in the Blues lineup. I did not see coming, but Calle Rosén is five straight games he's been in the lineup, and he keeps, and they keep putting him in there. And if they keep playing well until Krug comes back, I think he will be in there.
Well, JT, his thing, if he can get through a game without having one of those holy crap moments, with just an absolutely ridiculously bad decision with the puck. I mean, that's all. He's just got to take his shift, move the puck, stay out of harm's way. And occasionally, if there's a chance to go in and get the puck on goal, fine, because he's got that ability. But just avoid that disastrous play around your own net, particularly ill-advised outlet, lateral pass in front of the net, a drop pass to nobody. I mean, there's been a number of things we've seen other defensemen do. And so far, Cali's avoided that. Apparently, he likes being in the NHL versus the AHL.
Yeah, and he likes the NHL paycheck, being on a two-way contract. Reason number 5,833 why you should read the Post-Dispatch at STLToday.com. Way back in September, Doug Armstrong told us that the scouts. I said, "Who's this Rosén guy?" He said, "Oh, the scouts kind of like him." And so here he is. So he wouldn't be a total surprise if you were reading the PD religiously. I'm sure most of you are. But so he's keeping Mikola on the bench. And that's pretty interesting. But I think it's exactly what you're saying, Jeff Gordon. He knows he's got enough scoring up front. Berube, just give me a simple, direct guy which Callie Rosen is, who can get the puck out without much histrionics. He did have an old crap moment, as you called it, in his very first game. This was back in his first tour, way back whenever that was, whenever it was, like early December or something. But ever since then, he's just been solid. And really, that's all the Blues need right now on defense is solid.
You know, let's give a tribute to the Blues professional scouts, because, well, actually the whole scouting, because, but you look at Rosen, you look at what Walker has done, and then you look at what Toropchenko has done. Two guys who are, you know, minor league guys who moved around, who the Blues signed as free agents and are now here. And then Toropchenko, who they drafted and is coming on and has become a regular and is forcing out other guys. So it's the Blues have been able to fill in some blanks with some guys that look, you know, are depth guys, or Toropchenko, who's probably ahead of schedule and are making significant contributions.
Yeah, and it's a great point about particularly the draft. You know, I think one difference between this era, more modern era, that with Bill Armstrong leading into building a much of this with that side of the organization through scouting and drafting versus, you know, what happened with the Armo, Kekalainen, before that was, you know, the Blues back in the day, they scored some guys at the top of the draft, and, you know, Yarmo gets, you know, can take a bow on some big hits, but they weren't as good in the later rounds. And you look at this team, you know, even though Nico's in a bad place right now, but, you know, he's still been quite useful. You know, you start looking at guys that went after the first round and you know, the way Husso's developed, and it's just organizationally, it seems like they've got some guys coming along as well. In more recent drafts that have a chance, you have to do that because you're not, this is a franchise that's not going to spend a lot of time picking in the top five. It shouldn't over time, not with this ownership. I don't see them ever just conceding that point for many years of just trying to build that way. So JT, they've got to find guys, and they have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a key point. Mikula, I believe, was a fifth rounder. I think Torpo, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was a fifth rounder too, maybe a fourth rounder, but, and there have been some people that have told, like Tom and I, that they think, and just it sounds more hype than it is, that Toropchenko has some Pat Maroon qualities. Not the sandpaper, not the world-class trash talk, but just the big body, willing to get in front of the net, and the guy that's going to win most of the puck battles just through sheer size combined with his competitiveness, and that's something that the Blues need. Now, maybe he does, again, have the sandpaper that Maroon has as his game, but I think Toropchenko's got that in him. And obviously a much better skater than Pat Maroon, way better skater.
Yeah, Toropchenko, he was the 113th pick overall in 2017. So, they got Thomas, they got Kostin, and then they got Toropchenko. So, we saw Bill Armstrong last night. We had a booze with him, and Arizona's going to get better. It's going to be a lot of what Bill does in the draft, because they got picks. They got a lot of choices to make. So their future is going to be found there. Things that happen on draft day.
Well, Tom, one thing you could do to help Toropchenko is, maybe share some YouTube clips of the Magnus Pajarvi wraparound, because that was his one. That was Magnus PI's one move, and it wasn't bad. It kept him in the league for a while. With that kind of wingspan and that, you know, willingness to be around the net, I could see if he could master the Magnus PI wraparound, that might be five goals a year right there. I'm not saying he's going to go do the Zegras, because that's pretty tough to do. But just do the Pajarvi.
The Blues used to be a great wraparound team. They have not, I don't know that they've had more than one or two this year, but they set an NHL record a few years ago for most wraparounds. So, it's there in the playbook somewhere.
All right. So, hey, JT, you guys, Jake Neighbors had a chance to prove that he's still, remind the team that he's still going. Organization is, it sounded like the Chiefs glad to see him.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely he made a good impression earlier this year. This is a kid that, again, he may have some of the sandpaper that Toropchenko doesn't have, because he seems like he might become that type of player.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he probably could stand to get a little bit stronger, but he definitely is a power forward, and with some of the skill guys, it's nice to still add power forwards. It's interesting, you know, that he lived with Braden Schenn, because he's the guy that he should be watching everything that Schenn does. This is what a power forward should do and should be like. And but you know, he's had some tough luck this year, you know, with the World Juniors getting canceled, and he's got an upper body it's an injury right now that's kept him out for a bit, and but he's supposed to be back this coming weekend. You know, most of the junior leagues play the vast majority of their games on the weekend, so he's supposed to return, and they have just a loaded team. So I think 10 NHL draft picks on the Edmonton Oil Kings, and so he's looking forward to a long playoff run. The World Cup or the World Juniors, excuse me, will restart in like mid-August, and it'll be with that. And then he's going to come to camp. So definitely future looking up. And it was pretty cool the way the team during those couple days, because they got in, you know, that practice day Thursday and then Friday, they got him tickets to the game. They invited him to the team breakfast, everything like that. So, you know, they really make the younger players feel comfortable. And it was weird to see, because Neighbors, this is right after the game, he's down in the little bitty media room. It's like size of a large closet, basically. And he's in the back, Berube, rah, 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 Krabby Craig on Bennington. And then as soon as that's over, he sees Neighbors. Hey, Jake, big bear hug by the chief. And then off we go. The many moods of Craig Berube.
And they, you know, and they're in on Neighbors. They, you know, I don't know if his name came up at the deadline, but they didn't trade him, and they weren't going to trade him. So that's, yeah. And so when you look at what next year looks like, I think you got to look at, you know, Jake Neighbors as one of your 12 forwards, and they'll find a place for him.
It was very good to see a little nostalgia, not Cardinals level nostalgia, where they actually bring a guy back after years being gone, but some nostalgia anyways, with Carl Gunnarsson passing through town, JT, and a favorite, the media guys, because Carl was always just, you know, one, he's a real intelligent guy with good insights on the game, but you know, Carl was pretty much always in a pretty good mood and just a real good guy on the team. And you know, he could have played as long as his body held up as far as the Blues were concerned. And pretty much he did.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you got guys, we've talked about Sammy Blair, maybe Vince Dunn being kind of my guys. Well, Carl Gunnarsson is Tom Timmerman's guy. I don't know anyone at Enterprise who's happier to see Carl Gunnarsson than Tom Timmerman, and maybe vice versa. I don't know. Does Tom Timmerman have maybe just a little bit of a Swedish personality? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. So maybe there's something that's copacetic about him, but it was good to see Carl. I don't think Craig Berube was totally kidding when he said, you know, maybe Carl could come out of retirement next year. Did you get that impression, Tom? I wasn't sure he was kidding.
You know, when you talk about, you know, predictability, which is the big thing for Craig and for most coaches, and I think Carl Gunnarsson was predictable. The most unpredictable thing he did was score a goal in overtime against Boston. I mean, other than that, you know, you pretty much could take one Carl Gunnarsson game and put it next to every other one. It was the same thing. So it was great to see Carl, and he picked up right where he left off. It was as though Carl had not been gone. You know, he is just a happy, friendly guy, and it was great to see him. And we wish him all the best back in Sweden.
Yeah, I guess they can't play forever. He's got kids. He's got to settle in the family life. He and his wife taking some classes, got to figure out what he's going to do next. I wouldn't be surprised to see Carl running a team over there, or even coming back and getting in coaching on this side of the ocean as he tries to figure out his next steps. So, you know, like Alexander Steen, you know, I mean, guys like that, you just like to see him stay in the game. Okay, guys, the homestand continues with a slightly tougher competition. Seattle's in next. They just stuck one on the Dallas Stars, a Dallas Stars team that, while fatigued, was really anxious to get points. So it's a reminder to the Blues not to take lightly the Kraken, despite how the games have gone against them this season. And then after that, boy, the Minnesota Wild. And couple games left with the Wild, JT. That team is playing really well. Both goaltenders going now because Marc-Andre Fleury's aboard and Cam Talbot's been playing great himself. You know, it's this is going to be interesting. A little playoff preview coming up here at the Enterprise Center.
Yeah, yeah. First, just a quick word on Seattle. They are playing better. 5-4-1 in their last 10, and they're a tough out right now. So we're not going to see I don't even know who Seattle's minor league team is. We're not going to see their version of the Roadrunners. So, yeah, better be ready for that one. But then, yeah, you see Minnesota twice in like 8 days. I think there's something to be said for trying to finish second rather than third. Minnesota is one of the toughest. They have one of the best home ice advantages in the league to maybe get a potential game seven at Enterprise rather than up there, I think is a big thing. Just kind of at a very basic, simple level, they kind of remind me a little bit of the Blues in terms of, okay, Kaprizov looks like he could be a superstar, but right now, just a lot of good players. They're right behind the Blues in terms of 20 goal scorers. I think they have six, and they're a pretty high scoring team. They're kind of right with the Blues, but 3.5, 3.6 goals a game. Minnesota, though, not as good defensively. They're giving, I think, right at 3 goals a game. And let's face it, the Blues, maybe they won't verbalize that in the coming days or as we get closer to what looks like a more and more likely first-round playoff matchup. But the Blues have really had their number the last about year and a half. I think they were like 5-1-2 last year in the, you know, the 8-game extravaganza that you played against the same seven teams over and over. And then the Blues were dominant in the Winter Classic. I don't know. Maybe this is just a good matchup for the Blues. We'll see.
Yeah. You know, if you don't want to say it's a must win game, but if the Blues are going to catch Minnesota, it really would help them to win that game on Friday. If they lose that game, it opens up the gap and it's going to make catching up Minnesota a lot tougher thing to do. So there's a fair amount at stake. If the Blues can win that game, they're going to be one point behind, 2 points behind, depending on how things shake out here going into the last few weeks of the season. So when you get that close, it's anybody's game. When you're 5 points back, it's a bit more of a reach.
And JT, last thing on in the net front for this time around, you look at the Wild and they're never going to have more urgency, at least not for the next several years, because after this season, they're going to have some serious salary cap problems due to those painful buyouts of Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. So this year, they were able to do some things to load up. They're going to have to make some tough decisions going forward. They know, Bill Guerin knows that this is the year. He's got to go for it, which was reflected when he went in and added a goaltender when he already had a pretty good goaltender.
Yeah, no doubt. And that, kind of a word of caution as we circle back to our original point on Binnington for fans. Oh, just buy him out. What the Minnesota Wild will be facing this coming off season and next season is what Doug Armstrong has done a masterful job of avoiding by not buying out players or retaining salary. It's tough when you paint yourself into a corner cap-wise.
Yeah, Benjamin Hockman, who wrote a column about the Blues goalie situation in this morning's paper, and I were talking about it last night. And we were looking at a Binnington buyout. It's just, you know, off the charts, you know, impossible to do at this point. He'd be making a salary cap hit for the Blues for like another decade. So, but this is it. This is the chance for Minnesota. The tough thing for them is that it's also the year for Colorado. So that's they've got a tough path ahead of them. But it seems really likely at this point, you know, that the Blues are going to get Minnesota. There's probably a 2-3 chance right now that's who their first round opponent is. So this will be another aspect of Friday's game.
Well, that would be a fun series. The state of hockey it's a fun place to go playoff time, like you say, man. St. Paul is on fire for hockey, period. But for the playoffs, that would be something. So if that's what the Blues are headed for, it could well be a memorable spring. Well, that's it for this edition of the NetFront. A reminder that you can get all of our podcasts and our videos and all the coverage and all kinds of stuff on stltoday.com and in the Post-Dispatch, the print edition. But But online, we're doing more things online than anybody else, than any other news operation our size, period, North America. So please subscribe and support local journalism. For Jim Thomas, Tom Timmerman, I'm Jeff Gordon. Until next time, see ya.